Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of Action Movie Anatomy, talking about our boy, Denzel Washington. We're talking Safe House, maybe the most underutilized cast in the history of film, but it's not even really that crazy underutilized. I don't know. We have so many thoughts about this movie, guys. Hang out with us. We're going to talk Safe House. We'll see you in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom!
Yeah!
We've had an inordinate run of
With Denzel
movies.
Oh, I know.
Recently. This has got to be like Denzel number 4 in like 10 weeks or something.
Yeah, because we did Magnificent, then we did we're doing Safe House now. We
Training
did
Day, Magnificent, Safe House, Unstoppable. I feel like there's one other Denzel movie.
Look, man, when you're Denzel and you're that good, you can't help it.
He's so good. Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. This is the show where we talk about action movies on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. Today, we're breaking down another Denzel classic.
We are.
And
classic's an interesting word to use.
Everything he's in is a classic.
This is true. This is true.
So yeah, guys, this is pretty much, this is how it breaks down. We cover action movies on this show. Those action movies adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. He's the villain, but he's basically also the hero. Like,
yeah.
Tobin Frost.
Yeah, he's, I mean,
he Gleason's definitely, like, the real villain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a hero pairing, except, like, not even, because it's just, like, Denzel gets to be the best character.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where we always talk about how in certain movies they'll play, well, Tony Scott does it a lot, but in certain movies they'll play where they have, like, you know, a mixed two guys are the perfect hero together, and I don't know if that really works in this situation. I don't know if that's exactly what it is, but that's what we're presented as an audience.
Yeah, it's not a Ryan Reynolds movie, even though he's on screen the most. It's a Denzel movie
for sure,
and so he plays by his own rules.
Even so, to where when I did our breakdown, I put Ryan Reynolds first.
Yeah.
And then I had to switch it because it just felt wrong.
Yeah.
And the only people that see this breakdown are you and me.
Yeah.
But it still felt wrong.
No, yeah. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you... It's weird because, like we just said, Brendan Gleeson's kind of the real villain and Ryan Reynolds is kind of the hero and Denzel's kind of the villain. But, like, two of those three are the smartest people in the room. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I would say it's Ryan Reynolds and Denzel, which is what you're supposed to feel are the hero and the villain. Got a couple people in the chat there.
Yes.
Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. You've got, yeah, definitely. You got military,
yeah.
CIA, you know. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
At least one. There's
an
exploding car. There's a...
This movie is one of those ones that's super interesting because you and I had never seen it.
Yeah.
We've been told by a lot of people that it was pretty entertaining,
yep.
and our audience, as well as your roommate, I believe, yes.
Jeff likes this movie, yeah.
Had been telling us to watch this movie, and I didn't really ever know anything about it.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those interesting ones. There's a lot of inspiration for this show and segments and things we're going to talk about that all kind of come from this movie and where its placement is. It's a really fascinating movie in the sense that the two guys in it, when it came out, where they were, so star profiles is going to be great,
mm-hmm.
and also that, like, it should have. This movie should be a much more relevant movie than it is, and it's just not. It even made enough money that it should have been more relevant.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Like, all the way across the board, like, you've got people at the peaks of their career. Yeah, you know, yeah, let's just get into the conversation.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the trailer here, and we'll check it out, which I don't remember the trailer at all.
So, guys, before we just get into that, if you do want to follow along in the conversation, you can find Andrew and I, as well as the podcast, on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Ben Bateman Media.
You can find me at Andrew Guy.
And, of course, we are on Twitter at AMA Podcast. We have already... Yes, we've been on the show since we won the Schmodown, our first match. And that was awesome. We got so, like, new fans, new attention for the last week's episode. There's so many people that have been tweeting. They just found it. It's so exciting. Welcome to the show. Oh, my God.
It's also so exciting that you guys get to see us be ourselves
and
not... what we were on the Schmodown,
although,
which is like an awesome magnified version of ourselves.
Yeah. It's exactly how we are when we turn the cameras off.
Yes,
wait, what?
Exactly.
So my flight is just on the couch over
here. Yeah, it is. But yeah, so we appreciate you guys so much for coming over and finding us or following us from the show. And talking about things that we love to talk about.
And, you know, the one last thing I am going to mention, because I'm really excited about it, is there's this brand new app called Anchor.
And, oh, yeah, do it.
And, yeah, Anchor is this thing. It's like podcast meets Twitter. It's short-form audio blurbs, 2 to 3 minutes at a time. It's like a radio station that when you like, go to the profile, you just kind of hear that day's ideas, that day's thoughts. They've got all kinds of people from, like, IGN to, like, movie review sites. It's all types of content for all types of things. I was doing a Magic the Gathering show called 10 Minutes of Magic every day, and I have been, and I will continue to do that. And I'm going to be launching a movie show.
What?
I'm launching a daily movie show. It's just basically about awesome movies. There's a cool format. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not 100% on the name yet, but I'm between a couple things. It's going to launch tomorrow. So download Anchor. Follow me on Twitter. Download Anchor, the app. It's so much fun, and you guys will love it. And I'll talk about it more on the show here.
So once you're on Anchor, they just like look for your name? Or like they'll be able to find it pretty easily?
It'll be the name of a show. So okay. I will announce that show. I think it's going to have something to do with fist pumps, probably. But yes, definitely. Go to my Twitter, at Ben Bateman Media, because I'll be announcing the show and you know promoting the crap out of it.
Yeah, and it'll just be like a fun way to... I mean, Ben and I literally, we just sit around and talk about movies all day long. Yes. We play movie trivia, text each other all day long. So it's just kind of like... a quick insight every single day to just kind of like what we talk about.
All kinds of cool stuff. Yeah, Andrew will be guesting on. It'll be all my movie friends will be on it. So it's going to be super fun. I can't wait. Anchor, it's a great app. You can like call in with your thoughts. I can post your thoughts on my station. It's great. Awesome. Anyway, let's get into the trailer for Safe House.
He was one of the most brilliant CIA
operatives
we've ever had.
Happy birthday.
Until he went rogue. He's responsible for the deaths of multiple agents. This guy's just not going to walk into an American consulate without good reason.
Denzel's like, yeah, I can play that character.
Yeah, that'd be
like, show him that.
37 applicants, every one of them with more field experience than you.
How am I supposed to get more experience? I'm staring at four walls all day.
This is Weston.
We have a last-minute reservation.
Oh, my God.
Oh my God, that's Tobin Frost. Oh my God, that's Robert Patrick. Yeah. Incidentally, the same cinematographer as the Bourne movies. Oh my God, that's the same cinematographer as the Bourne movies.
Rule number one, you are responsible for your house guest.
Perfect.
I'm your house guest. They're here for me, but they want me alive. You don't kill. Time's a wasting.
You don't kill.
Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock.
Hey, hey!
Get in. You serious?
Yeah. Get in the trunk!
The safe house has been compromised. Follow protocol.
Protocol? There's no protocol for this!
Who's after us and why?
I think you need to consider how your safe house was attacked in the first place. That house was a secure location. Whoever crashed it, they were invited. Someone told them. Someone you know.
You're not gonna get in my head.
I am already in your head.
Tears on the mausoleum floor. Blood stains the Colosseum floor.
It's like
working together.
Even the sky is a feast.
I think Weston's turned.
It's like a basic enough trailer with good enough people that I would have been totally intrigued to watch this movie. And I think I did see the trailer when it came out.
You can stay blind, or you can open your eyes.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here.
I want you to take me in.
I can't even finish my sentence because I want to watch this movie.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
Like, I want to watch this movie.
There's several things about the movie that trailer sells well that don't actually happen in the movie.
Yeah.
One.
Absolutely. Was that car jumping at the end? I don't remember that.
There's a chase earlier in the movie. Mm. But the first one is that, like, Denzel seems like so much more like top of his game badass villain Denzel in the trailer than he actually does in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, we always write here, you know, that we always, there's like a joke that we'll always write under length here, because in the
yeah,
beginning
for
it was like,
it's
just there. It's been there in our outline since we started the show.
It starts with Action Movie Anatomy, and then it says length, movie, director, and year, and I have no idea why we put length in, and it stayed there for almost 100 episodes.
Yeah,
and we just put a joke in every week.
We usually put a joke, and it's sometimes inappropriate, and this one is just Denzel phoning it in, because, like, he's totally serviceable,
yeah,
but just completely unmemorable.
I like want to get into thesis statement right now.
Okay.
Like, I want to jump right into it because I think this is a super interesting conversation. I think there's a lot of thesis statements to be had, and I think
I'm excited about mine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like one of them is what you're talking about is like maybe this is the best, like the greatest example of Denzel just phoning in a film.
Yeah.
You know, and then like the other one is like this is the biggest waste of two A-list actors in their prime.
Yeah.
Mine, I think. Oh, the other one is that we've talked about this so many times, and I think you said it on John Wick 2, maybe, when you were like, this movie shows, or Jack Reacher, I don't remember, you're like, this movie shows that we as creators and as an audience have no idea what the formula is to make a good action movie.
Oh, yeah, it was
anymore.
John Wick.
It was John Wick.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is perfect for this as well. So I, with all those being said, which I think any one of those could be just as good as my thesis statement that I'm using, is that this film shows exactly what happens when there's no heart in movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny because it's if you look into the making of this movie and all the details that got this movie made, and you read about it, you watch the interviews, and I did a lot of them. This was one of the top blacklist scripts of unmade scripts. This was, you know, the director wanted to sit down with Denzel and work on the character. They sat down for 3 months writing this together. Like, Denzel doesn't get a credit, but I mean, basically, like, he was very familiar with this project. This, like, this should have been. This should have been legit. This came out the year after Green Lantern, so it should have been like Ryan Reynolds was just right there.
They were both right there.
Yeah, sometimes things... I think Flight was the same year. Yeah. I think he got an Oscar for Flight this year. Sometimes things just don't add up.
Yeah, and this is one of them where I think... And that's why I don't know... Like you say, it doesn't add up. What is the missing part of this equation? Where did we forget to carry the one? And that was the heart. That's the heart. No one has... There's no heart in this film. There's no one loves the character they're playing. Ryan Reynolds might.
I think Denzel, I think he likes his character.
Likes.
Yeah.
Loves. Like, really attached to.
There's something.
You know?
Yeah,
there's just something missing.
100%. And I think my thesis is going to give us a little bit of somewhere to jump from.
And again, like, Vera Farmiga, Brendan Gleeson, these people are all great actors.
Yeah.
This has an incredible cast. So I think that this movie is the best example, or one of the greatest examples, of what happens to a film, blacklist script, A-list actors, Oscar winners, Oscar nominees, when there's just no heart.
So I'm going to do something a little different here, because what you just talked about as far as that goes and what my thesis are going to do are going to take us directly into actors profiles.
Because, that's
fine. And I think we'll get to all of the games and things right after we do that. But I thought about this a lot. I had a lot of the similar theses as the ones you just shared.
Yeah.
And this was the one that stuck with me, because we have a thing written down right here that we're going to get to, and it's the reason it leads into this is that a section we call Don't Be So Dramatic. Why do some actors have such a hard time being taken seriously dramatically? Because it's no secret, Ryan Reynolds has struggled to be taken seriously as a dramatic actor.
Absolutely.
Even though he's a good actor. So my thesis statement is that Ryan Reynolds is the highest profile movie star doing drama without a dramatic hit to his name.
Ryan Reynolds is the biggest... Yeah.
And this movie makes me think of it because... Exactly when it came out. So I'll put that into context for you guys. If you're just listening or you're watching and you're trying to think what exactly that means and who would this compare to. So take the other segment we just mentioned, right? Why do like some actors struggle to be taken seriously dramatically? And I'm talking like A-list actors.
Yeah.
You know, think about, okay, McConaughey is a great example of a guy who really did struggle for a while. He was in a lot of stuff, but early in McConaughey's career, he was at least in some movies.
I mean, I think you look at any of those guys in the 90s that were just put as heartthrobs.
Yeah.
You know?
Most of them never break out. McConaughey was able to change it finally, but it took him into his 40s, well into his 40s before he was able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Reynolds, if you go look at Reynolds' career, so let's just start right here, okay? Change Up is 2011. That's the movie with Jason Bateman. It's funny enough.
It's fine, yeah.
He's just playing Ryan Reynolds. Green Lantern, 2011, one of the bigger superhero flops in recent memory. And Buried, which is a Redbox movie.
Which I've heard is actually pretty sweet. I really wanted to watch Buried.
Yeah, before the show, just to get going?
No. I like just wanted to watch it when it came out, and I just never got around to it. I was in college, or just finishing college at the time, so like my buddy and I, it just looked awesome. Like,
and it was a Redbox movie, right?
It's a Redbox movie. It's just him on screen in a box.
So let's just put that in context for a second. 2009, he's got The Proposal. The Proposal that might be his biggest hit. I mean, aside from now, obviously he's bigger. But like, let's cut him off at 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cut him off before like he's in this new phase of Ryan
Reynolds. Okay, so wait, you're talking The Proposal, because the other movies that you look at with Ryan Reynolds are Waiting and Van Wilder. Those are the two.
And Just Friends.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, you and I love that movie, but a lot of people don't know that movie.
Well, I think it came out the same year as Waiting, so and I think it made a lot more money.
Waiting, but Just Friends. What was the other one I just said? Oh, Van Wilder.
Van Wilder, yeah. So if you go all the way back to the beginning, Ryan Reynolds is a TV actor. He got his first job on a show called 15 when he was 15 in 1991.
Jesus.
The guy's been working forever. So he's like not someone who's... I mean, he didn't get those movies we're talking about. Van Wilder's 02. Mm-hmm. He'd been working consistently on many television shows for 11 years. And just in Freaks and Geeks, Two Guys, a Girl in a Pizza Parlor.
Right.
Like, he did that show for 3 years, and then that ended, and he did Van Wilder. So, if you look at his career path, 02 hits. He's already been in the game for 10, 11 years. He's made tons of money. Van Wilder was, like, the first time that he really hit that college audience at the right time.
And he found his perfect, like, sarcasm or whatever. His delivery. Thing. Whatever it is.
In a movie. Yeah. People saw it.
Yeah.
2004 is both Just Friends and Waiting. Mm-hmm. So that's like the next... Or I'm sorry. That's 2005 because 2004 is Blade Trinity.
Oh, yeah. So him and Alba.
Yeah. Blade Trinity or Jessica Biel.
Biel, yeah.
Blade Trinity is an interesting one because it's clearly one of these times if you watch him in Van Wilder, he's not that shredded. He's like an in-shape guy, right. But he's like a normal college kid.
In Trinity, he's getting there because he's still like... I mean, he's jacked, but he's like so young.
Yeah.
You know, there's like that weird young jacked.
He's like shredded, and he clearly took the chance to like, okay, I'm going to be on screen. I'm going to have my clothes off. I'm going to get super yoked for this movie as much as I can, and that's going to be my thing. And Ryan Reynolds, for a little while, was the body guy. That was his thing in the mid-2000s. So you keep watching as the career's developing, and he's showing up in movies. And I remember, distinctly, The Proposal comes out, and you're like, oh, okay, he is front runner next to Sandra Bullock in a big-time summer rom-com. Mm-hmm. This should be, and the movie made a lot of money, and it was a hit.
People love that movie.
And people love that movie. So you're thinking at that point, Adventureland comes out, right, with Bill Hader and Jesse Eisenberg, right? You're like, and Ryan Reynolds and that. You're like, all right, great. So he's there now. His next 4 or 5 years should be just stocked. This weird thing happened, though. The world didn't want Ryan Reynolds to be a leading man. They just didn't. You look at all the movies that came out around then that he tried to be dramatic. The Nines, Chaos Theory. Like, he did all these movies that just no one gave a shit.
Well, it was just such a weird thing because Ryan Reynolds has gotten to this point where, like, no one wanted him to be anything. They didn't want him to be, like, the young... hot guy. They didn't want him to be like the smarmy, quirky, like funny guy that was like kind of an asshole, and they didn't want him to be dramatic. They just didn't want him, which is why he basically just got married and took a break.
Wolverine Origins comes out, and they seal his mouth shut in the second half of the movie. I mean, that's another one where you're like, okay, Ryan Reynolds, he should be a star for playing Deadpool, except they only give him like a couple minutes of screen time.
Right, and with the character who is made to be heard.
To be heard, right.
Yeah.
That movie comes out. The literal follow-up to The Proposal is Buried, a Redbox movie with him by himself on screen. Like, somebody didn't do their job. So then, 2011 hits, right? We're right getting up to the point now. Green Lantern comes out. We're all thinking, okay, great. So this is Blake Lively. It's Gossip Girl. Yeah. It's Christoph Waltz. He just won an Oscar. Ryan Reynolds is the star. DC's making the push. They're following up the Batman movies. Total flop.
Total flop.
Complete.
Not a good movie.
And total flop.
Yep.
Like, it's unbelievable to me that he's managed to actually become a true A-lister now after all this happened, because then the change-up, Safe House
if it weren't for Deadpool, he wouldn't.
No.
Like, there's literally nothing. I mean, you can, with a lot of actors, you can go back and find the one movie that really did stuff for them.
Yeah.
And with Ryan Reynolds, it's harder to say, was it Van Wilder or was it Deadpool? And I think now that we're older, you say it's Deadpool because you look at the rest of his career, he's going to have a chance for 20 more years, whereas Van Wilder gave him a chance for 5.
Yeah, I think in this phase, like where the kind of movie star he's in with Life coming out this weekend, it is Deadpool. That's the movie that did it.
That movie looks so sweet.
Yeah, Life looks great.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, you look at Safe House and you think to yourself, all right, Safe House in 2012, this should have been the movie. Like, this is built to be the movie.
Yeah, Blacklist script, Denzel, you're the lead. It just should be, but that's, again, what I was talking about with my thesis. It just... Because what happens?
Compare him for a second to Chris Pine, which I think is a pretty safe comp for the time.
Mm-hmm.
They get a lot of the same roles. Chris Pine's follow-up to Star Trek was Unstoppable. Similarly, like, underloved
movie.
With Denzel, with a younger star that's supposed to tag along. And Unstoppable is regarded by most people as a pretty quality action movie. They like that movie. People like Unstoppable. It did well.
Yeah.
No one gives a shit about Safe House. It didn't make... made money. It's just like no one remembers it. It's like this just sort of like amorphous, like lifeless movie. It's just hilarious to me. And I think... So my thesis statement that Ryan Reynolds is the biggest movie star going for dramatic roles that doesn't have a dramatic hit. I don't know. I mean, Life might be a hit, and it's an ensemble movie, and maybe it will be.
Yeah, and Smokin' Aces wasn't a hit, and he was, like, it was an action movie, but he was dramatic in it. Yeah, I think I can agree with that.
Yeah, because then if you start to try to think who else could you compare to him, that's what that segment's supposed to be. I couldn't think of anyone else. I couldn't think
that
of a single...
That else has, like, that career?
I couldn't think of a single other handsome leading man who's that funny and has worked for that long and was, like, a comedy guy, had tried drama over and over again and just failed at it. R.I.P.D. I mean, these movies are just, like...
Maybe Shia... but he's too young right now.
And people kind of love him as a dramatic actor. Like,
they kind of do, but it's the same thing where they... Yeah. I bet Buried was sweet. I bet it was good.
It's true.
We didn't watch it, you know? All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to our, I guess, Fist Pump? You want to do Fist Pump now, or you want to do...
Well, you want to just cover Denzel?
You want to finish this? Okay, yeah, yeah.
Denzel's real quick. So, yeah, Denzel, his spot is a little bit different. We've covered two of these three movies.
It was so weird. Like, I've covered Denzel so many times, and going back and looking at his IMDb this time, for some reason, I was like, God, he really took a big break.
He just slowed way
down. He just slowed down.
Big time.
Like, one movie a year.
Yeah, so 2009, he does Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, which I love.
Yes, we know.
2010, he does The Book of Eli.
Which is horrible.
I've never watched it.
It's very bad.
Big flop.
Yeah.
And the Hughes brothers, right? It's the guys that directed Dead Presidents and Menace to Society.
Yeah, it's just one of those movies where it's like, you put Denzel in a role to be such a badass.
Yeah.
And he wasn't.
Yeah.
And how is that ever possible? How can you not make Denzel Washington a badass?
Yeah.
You know?
And then Unstoppable in 2010, which I'm a big fan of, and that's, he literally took a break. He didn't do a movie in 2011?
I can't remember, but there's a point there. It might have been 8 to 9, or maybe he skipped 8 or skipped 11, but yeah. There's years in there where he just didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he's been working forever. There's a whole earlier part of that guy's career that, like, we are pretty big Denzel fans,
yeah,
and the entire 80s to early 90s is, like, not really something we ever talk about.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you guys know from watching us on the Schmodown, like, I mean, you wouldn't know yet, but for movie trivia, like, the categories that are on that show, like 70s and 80s, it's so weird because you and I watch so many movies and we talk about movies so much, but you just can't put in the work for something you weren't born for. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to soak it up like we do with these movies that come out now.
Agreed. So, yeah, I think with Denzel, this movie not being a hit for him is, like, makes a little more sense because Two Guns is, like, I think the next year, and it's kind of the same thing. But the fact that they had paired those two guys together at that moment for Ryan Reynolds is the surprising part. So, anyway, we're going to step it back now to the stuff that we usually start the show with, some fun stuff, and we're going to get into Fist Pump Moment. If you guys are watching or listening for the first time, Fist Pump Moment is that moment something happens. You just kind of look around. You want to be like, are you seeing this right now? This is so sweet. Watch that again. Rewind it. That's so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I rewinded mine for sure this time. Yeah.
I wonder, it can't be the same one. Mine's, like, way, way, way too esoteric.
It probably is. It's probably not. I mean, it's probably not the same one because mine's kind of weird, too. So, my one where I'm just like, yeah, it's fist pump in an action movie, was right when Ryan Reynolds puts on the seatbelt and crashes into the car in the parking garage. Yeah. Like, that car chase was actually really sweet. It's actually a really good car chase.
Yeah, agreed.
And, like, him and Denzel fighting and the way that it ends, and, like, there's so many things in this movie with, like, how intelligent Ryan Reynolds is that are good, that, like, make sense. Like, the way he gets away and, like, his idea to put on a seatbelt and crash, and, like, he owns it. He really embodies his character. But, still, something was missing. But so my fist pump, though, and it's also my favorite line, but it's when he's sitting in the chair and he's like, you need 600s.
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's like, those are 375s, right? You need 600s. He's like, what are you talking about? And then Robert Patrick says the guy's name. I can't remember his name. He's like, blah, da, 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 lasted for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Denzel's like, yeah, you had 600s, though, didn't you? Like, that moment where I'm like, what is... He's about to get waterboarded, and he's telling them why he's going to be okay.
He's so calm.
He's so calm. And then he gets back up, and he's, like, dying. He's like, how long was that?
Do you know that he actually waterboarded him in filming?
Really?
Multiple times. He'd do 2 or 3 seconds at a time in filming. He wanted to really do it.
You know what? I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
I 100% would.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to die. I just want to know what it's like.
Got to be so savage.
It's horrible.
Horrible. So my fist bump moment, this is, like, funny to me, because I was, like, struggling the whole movie to really, like, latch on to one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That moment you're talking about is definitely sweet. I was close to that one, because anytime Denzel's being Denzel, it can just, his Denzelishness, they say on the Denzel Washington podcast, can just, like, be the thesis.
You're going to torture me.
Yeah.
All right.
But my fist bump moment is like the shootout in the, like, little shack at the end, and Denzel comes back to save Ryan Reynolds and like kill the dudes, and he's hiding behind like a door at the end of the hallway, and he dashes across for a second to shoot one of the guys.
Oh yeah.
But he doesn't dash. He just walks slowly. He like walks at normal pace and then shoots as he's walking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Denzel must have. He must have like, because he does it. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, Denzel's like, probably like, he's like, I'm not gonna run. This character doesn't run. He's calm. He walks calmly and he shoots. He's like, no, he would go as fast as fucking possible because they have guns,
like machine guns.
Yeah.
Like, no.
No. It's like, no, of course not. He's gonna walk calmly and shoot. That's like what he does.
That's so funny.
And I was watching it. I was like, of course, man.
It's so funny because I had another one that was just like that. It was a super weird moment. It was during the first car chase. It's like they're crashing into each other. They're banging into other cars. It's like a fucking movie Hollywood car chase,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Halfway through it, the guy chasing him is like, put on my silencer.
Yeah.
What? Your silencer in the middle of a car chase in the middle of a town? You're worried about your gun being loud?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was fucking great.
It was awesome, yeah. They died. So that's the fist bump moment, guys. If you have any fist bump moments or thesis statements of your own you want to share, tweet at us at MA Podcast or leave them in the comments. We always love to know what you think.
Tobin Frost does not run.
No, Tobin Frost does not run. And speaking of Tobin Frost.
Tobin Frost.
So, guys, we've made comments in the past to the sweetness of certain characters' names.
Memphis Reigns
or Axel Torvalds.
Axel Torvalds is so
that's
good.
That's a good one. So we just figured,
there's a couple
Travolta's
other ones.
Travolta's name in Swordfish.
Is it it's
Gabriel or something?
Yeah, something Gabriel. But
I can't remember.
Fuck, there's one that Travolta has or someone has that's really good.
Is it, there's a couple. So the face-off ones are really good.
Yeah.
Caster Troy.
And
I'm Caster Troy. Yeah, Caster Troy is a really good one.
Yeah, that was better than his.
But isn't he a super sweet character in Broken Arrow? Doesn't he have a great name in Broken Arrow?
Yeah, someone wrote that.
I think he has a sick name in Broken Arrow. I can't think what it is offhand. But anyway, guys, we decided to come up with our three fictional deep cover, possibly rogue agents.
Yeah, mine are all bad guys. I have four, and I'm trying to decide which one to cut.
I like my three a lot.
All right, go ahead with your first one.
I didn't come up with like code names or just like
it's just straight up their names.
So if my first one is going to be Derek Saber. It could just be a porn star name. Derek Saber.
Derek Saber.
Or Sabers. I thought Derek Sabers, but Sabers seems a lot more porn to me.
That's good. I almost feel like this one just is one because it's so
good.
This one is Alistair Sinclair.
Alistair Sinclair. Does he spell it funny? Like A-L-L-I-S-T-O-R?
He's got to. Or like
Alistair.
Alistair Sinclair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Sinclair. I like Sinclair. I also like St. Clair. Alistair St. Clair.
Alistair St. Clair.
There's a
capital
good.
ST. Okay, yeah. All right. What's your next one?
My next one is Jackson Lazarus, codenamed the Laser. Jackson Lazarus went off the grid 4 days ago.
I wanted to use words like Lazarus and things like that, but I have one that's ridiculous.
Oh, my third is super sweet.
My third one is like a villain in like a fantasy movie. I got my other. So I had two. I couldn't decide between. There's Edgar Killian.
Oh, Killian's
and
really good.
Simon Drake. I don't know why I like Simon
Both
Drake.
Both are great. Simon and Drake. And Slade is a good one to use, too.
Slade. Blazer. Or was it Blade? Laser. Blazer. All right. What is your third ridiculous one? Because mine is obscene.
I had to go with the European one.
Yeah.
So I decided. I was talking to Jeff about this, by the way, and he was like, the lead. He's like, one of the characters in Billions is Bobby Axelrod. I was like, that's a sweet
that's
name.
A good one.
But Bobby is too good. You can't
you
be
can't
a
have
bad
Bobby.
Guy named Bobby.
Mm-mm. It'd be William.
So my last one is Sven Terix.
T-E-R-R-I-X?
T-A-R-Y-X. Sven Terix.
I like the spelling more than anything.
Yeah, Sven Terix.
All right, so like I said, this guy's like a bad guy in like a fantasy film, like a demon.
Okay.
His name is Callus Mephisto.
Callus Mephisto, because Mephisto's like the devil.
It's one of the devil's brothers, yeah. But I just like this name.
He's callous.
He's callous, and he's a devil.
And he's the devil.
One of those ones from like the 80s that is just like so on the head that it's too much.
Callous Mephisto.
Anyway, guys, so if you came up with any sweet names,
Sven
people
Terix.
Are like, no, we have real jobs.
Ben Bateman, a.k.a. Sven Terix.
Simon Drake.
Yeah, if we ever find ourselves in, like a super intense, like hit and run espionage international situation where we're on the run, we have to make names. Contact. Like, but it has to be somewhat anonymous so that they don't know that you like we're on it. I'm gonna use the name, the codename Sven Terex.
I'll use Simon Drake.
Simon Drake.
And then what's going to happen is you and I are going to be on the run for like 10, 15 years, yeah. And then someone will find this episode and it will bring us down.
It'll be like, I'll be like, you know, on my computer, like cut forward, and it'll be like, sir, you have a call from Simon Drake. Like, you know, like...
Hold my appointments.
Yeah.
Get out of the office.
Clear the office.
Clear everything.
Clear the room.
All right. So, moving on to production development.
We are off the rails.
We are really crazy today. Moving on to production development, I'm going to talk about David Guggenheim, who's a relative newcomer. He's the writer of this film. But he's actually got a lot of great things coming up for him. So this was actually the first screenplay he'd ever written. And like you said, it was unproduced on the blacklist. It was like, why?
Why was it?
Why?
Was it unproduced?
No. Why was it on the blacklist? Oh. Why is it like celebrated on the blacklist? Like, what is it about? This movie's too long. it doesn't really, you know?
I think there's a couple things. I think like... A couple things happened. So the first one is that I think that this movie, probably the original script was vastly different than what ended up on screen. And yeah. I think a lot of the choices made, I don't know exactly how I feel about Daniel Espinosa as a director, but I don't think he's great. I don't think he has like, I think he's a little too Smokin' Aces for my taste in general.
Yeah. Did he do Smokin' Aces?
No, but just like the style. Yeah. It's all just like everything's crime, everything's cool. Like there's a lot of directors that want to do that sort of thing because
they're
just
trying so hard to be cool.
I mean, I could be wrong about the guy, but that's the feeling I get, is that this movie, just the studio and everybody pushed it to just be this like cookie cutter version. Even the ending, which I really dislike the final shot. He needed to just not find her. Like,
yeah.
Because that would have been if he's going to actually become Tobin Frost, which
he can't have that girl.
He can't ever make contact with her again because she's going to die.
So Guggenheim, though, was he the guy that sat down with Denzel?
No, it's the director.
Was it the director? Okay, exactly.
Daniel Espinosa sat down for 3 months with Denzel to like talk about the character. It's funny, Denzel in an interview was saying that like in the initial meeting with the studio, when they're like, he's got to be bad, he's got to be evil, this character. Mm-hmm. Denzel was like, you're going to tell me how to do my character, huh? And he's like, this guy's a bisexual sociopath. That's what he does. That's who he is.
That's what he said.
And he's like, doesn't care. He'll sleep with anybody. He just wants to win. That's all he wants to do. Is that scary enough for you? And then he was like, I think in earlier versions of the script, they played the bisexual thing a little more, but I think they chickened out. They chickened out. Yeah. I think they got rid of it.
Too early. That's great, though. So Guggenheim, he got his start with this as a screenplay, but he was known for doing Stolen, which I can't remember much about that film.
It's a Nick Cage movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I don't know anything about
it. He's on the cover kind
of
like this?
Yeah, of course he is. He's got the good old Wesley Snipes pose. And then he's got Exit Strategy, which is a TV movie, but the big thing for him is that he's the creator and writer of several or almost all the episodes of Designated Survivor, that Kiefer Sutherland show that's actually pretty popular. So right now he's working on Safe House 2. Yay. And Bad Boys for Life.
Okay.
So
he's writing Bad Boys for Life, huh?
Yeah. He must be partnered up with someone.
Yeah, you must know our buddy.
Yeah. So that's David Guggenheim. Not much else to talk about with him.
So, all right. This movie is directed by Daniel Espinosa. Espinosa is a young Swedish director. He only had a few credits. His big first credit was a film called Easy Money. It was a Swedish film. Broke records for like most admissions in Sweden that year, 2010. It actually stars Joel Kinnaman, who... Yeah. I didn't know, because Joel Kinnaman's in this movie as a small part, and everybody saw Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg in Suicide Squad. And
dude, it's so that name, Joel Kinnaman, last night I finally just had to ask. I was like, this fucking guy has been in everything. Because I turned on my TV right after this was over, and Child 44 was on, and he's in that with Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
And then he was in a preview for another movie last night for a movie I was about to watch, and I finally was asking my buddy, like, who is this guy? He's like, Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah.
I was like, I know who he is, but he's blowing up.
I looked up, because my first thought was Joel Kinnaman. It's the same thought you and I have every time there's like a handsome white guy who's getting work. Is like, well,
he's kind of scrappy looking.
Who is this guy? And I started to look, and he's the star of Easy Money, but he also, there's like a Swedish film franchise that he's the star of, that he was in like 9 movies over there.
Okay.
He's been in tons of stuff, and he's a big deal over there. He was in the top 3 running to be the star of Mad Max Fury Road. He was in the top 5. He was like the runner-up for Thor. Like,
there's a big movie I'm thinking of that I just saw him in. It's driving me crazy. Was he in one of the Avengers? He wasn't, was he?
He's in Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad. Yeah. Okay, that
he's in Knight of Cups, the Terrence Malick movie. He's like, he's just this guy who's like breaking out right now, but he's been pretty clear that he doesn't need to take American work. He's like happy to work in Sweden. Yeah. He's not going to take American work just to take it. So anyway, he's in Child 44, which is also directed by Espinosa. That's the movie that he did after Safe House, Before Life.
And I only watched the last little bit of it, so I don't know if it was good or not.
I didn't watch Child 44. Yeah, I haven't seen it. But basically, Espinosa was pretty clear that like he wanted to come over and do American movies. He started getting sent a lot of scripts for Safe House around the time that his movie Easy Money was showing well at Berlin Film Festival. He read like 40 scripts, decided to do this movie, and really wanted to go with a studio that was going to treat him like Greengrass had been treated when he came over to do the Bourne movies. Because he felt like his soul, as he said, had been kept as a director, as a foreign director, right. And so it's just funny because there's definitely a part of him that like feels like he is a little bit Greengrass-ish
for sure,
but a little less raw, a little more cliche.
Yeah, and like it's hard to call Greengrass innovative anymore because the whole thing has been overdone, but. He was innovative at one point, whereas Espinosa has not been.
Most interesting thing about Espinosa, to be perfectly honest with you, is his age.
How old is he?
At 34, he directed this movie. He directed Safe House at 34. He did Child 44 2 years later, and he's got Life coming out. He's not 40 yet.
Look, man, we got 6 years, okay? We can do a lot in those next 6 years.
So, yeah, he's like, you know, definitely got to work with some pretty crazy casts. Tom Hardy and Gary Oldman in Child 44.
Obviously. It's so interesting to see how... Sorry to cut you off, but like how he's going to do with Life, because Life looks so different than what he typically directs, and it looks like such a good film. Not to say that he doesn't make good films, but Child 44 didn't feel like this either, but what he'd done up to that point, they all feel very similar. You know?
Yeah, I mean, my perception of Life prior to the, you know, a few months ago when the trailer first showed, I think it was during a sports game, I looked it up and like saw, oh, he's the guy that directed these movies. Like, I'll temper my expectations a little bit. So,
but then you look at the trailer.
He's also so young, and it's like, I wonder if it's going to be really good, and it's just that we're going to look back on his first few movies, and they're going to be like serviceable, and he'll just get better and better.
I mean, you look at the people that kind of hit it big young, and a lot of them, I mean, not like super young. I mean, P.T. Anderson's an exception, but like, they do grow exponentially.
Yeah.
You know, like, you look at even Nolan, I think Nolan's a great example, because you look at his first five movies and like each one of them
gets a lot
by
better.
The fifth one you're like, that's an Oscar movie.
Yeah, Fincher, you know? Fincher's like that. Fincher got better and better and better. Yeah, for sure. So produced by Scott Stuber. This is funny. He's the associate producer on Volcano in 97, and then he doesn't have an actual credit for almost 10 years. He was the co-president of production at Universal with Mary Parent in 2004, and then he basically changed roles, ended up working with like Universal Pictures and all kinds of different stuff for a long time. He's still working, and he's produced all kinds of things, everything from Role Models to like The Kingdom, Yumi and Dupree, The Breakup. Like, he's just a big...
He just kind of does those... a producer.
Yeah, he's a big producer, works on a lot of big stuff. He's got, you know, he's definitely one of these people whose name shows up on big movies. He's still consistently working. He's credited as producing a couple things. The Scarface remake, which is supposedly going to star Diego Luna.
God damn it.
And
what's going to happen with that? I'm so curious to see how you remake Scarface and how it's... Al Pacino's still alive.
Yeah.
And, like, it doesn't need to happen. No. You don't need a remake to that movie.
No, especially because the original's so bad.
Yeah, you hate the original. So the other night, it was like a month ago, my buddy came over. He's like, oh, Scarface. He turns it on. We ended up watching the whole thing from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I think it was the first time... Actually, my roommate likes it, but he's not the same. He's not, like, his vocal.
Yeah.
You know? But my buddy Dave, it was interesting watching it with someone that loved that movie.
Yeah.
It definitely made me appreciate it a little bit more.
I'm like way too harsh on Scarface.
No, I know that, but yeah. I still am... I'm closer to where you are than where Dave is.
Yeah, Scarface is a good movie. It's
fine.
It's got good stuff. It's got cool... It's just very dated, and it's got a great performance. It's just not my favorite, and I think it's like super, super overhyped.
It's got a pretty good performance. At this point now, it feels super cartoonish.
Yeah, really?
But it still is good.
It's been a while since I've watched it.
All right, so critically and box office, this movie is... it was actually very successful. It was produced by Universal. It only cost $85 million to make.
How did this movie cost $85 million to make?
It's you say only, and then at the same time, you're like, how the fuck did this movie cost $85 million to make?
I get it, like the car chase and explosions, but it's like most
of
this movie...
So you think maybe $30 million goes to Denzel and Ryan?
I guess. I mean... This movie feels like you could have made this movie for like $30 million and just cut 20. A lot of the action.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the action is irrelevant.
Or just kept the action, replaced the leads.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Did you see the list of the guys that were up for Ryan Reynolds' role? This is something I thought was really interesting.
It was big.
Huge.
Right?
It was 12 different guys, and I can't remember all of them offhand, but it was like, I started thinking to myself, because of my thesis with Ryan, like, he's good. He's actually very good in this movie. He actually does a good job.
I was trying to talk to you about, and that's one of the reasons I want to watch Buried, is Ryan Reynolds does such a great job, and you see it at the end of Smoke and Aces, where he's just like, I mean, that's why he ends up in Smoke and Aces. It's the same thing. He gets fucked over by the government. He gets betrayed by his own government, who he works for. So I think that was just, he has this like look of being betrayed that's so good.
Yeah.
People just don't like it.
It was like, it's like Joel Edgerton, Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf, like Jake Gyllenhaal, like every like basically like serviceable to very good leading man in Hollywood around
like
that age,
20s to mid 30s.
There was like 12 of them, and I was thinking to myself about all of them. I was like, yeah, he could have done it. He could have done it. He could have done it. He could. The role like ultimately is good, but like it doesn't require Ryan Reynolds any skill set that Ryan Reynolds has. He was just slotted in.
Yeah, and that's another thing is that these two role. I mean. Since Denzel is Denzel, he can say things like, no.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this.
Right.
But Ryan Reynolds can't at that point.
Denzel had a green light clause in his contract to do this movie where he could basically, they tried to fire the director over creative differences, and he was like, no, he's finishing the movie.
Denzel said that.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not going to finish unless he finishes the movie. It's in my contract.
And they're like, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. So back to what I was saying. Universal, $85 million. It was released in February of 2012. So people weren't really, I mean, another thing, after doing the show for so long, you really learn what studios think movies are going to do.
Yeah.
And that's why they release them when they release them. This was not going to be an Oscar movie. This was not going to compete with summer blockbusters. This is just something to watch earlier on in the year. It made $126 domestic, an additional $81 worldwide for a gross total of $208 million.
Yeah. It's
pretty successful.
$200 million. Like, Marissa, can we throw up, please, the box office graphic of top Ryan Reynolds movies? I pulled this. I thought this was interesting. It says worldwide unadjusted, but obviously Deadpool is number one. The Croods. anytime there's an ensemble cast with an actor in an animated movie, it always shows up on these lists, and it's like
always in the top three.
We like don't account for it because it's just Ryan Reynolds was in The Croods. I didn't remember that. Did you?
No. Well, we've been quizzing each other relentlessly about animated films.
X-Men Origins, obviously, The Proposal, fourth, Turbo, Green Lantern, Safe House. This is his seventh highest grossing movie. He's made more money worldwide than Blade 3. Wow. I mean that's before adjustment, and it's you know, almost it's 8 years difference. But like, if you look at that, the Amityville Horror, RIPD, like, he hasn't been in movies that made any money.
He hasn't been in very many good movies.
No, he hasn't. His career is astonishing.
It really is. You look at this and you're like, those are his most successful films.
Yeah, it's the top 10. I'm never going to watch RIPD if I can help it.
Never.
Amityville Horror I did see in theaters when it came out.
Saw that.
You
did?
Yeah.
That's not a movie that you would see.
For some reason.
Yeah.
Blade Trinity I saw in theaters. Safe House I've seen. Green Lantern I haven't seen.
Origins Wolverine's horrible.
Yeah, I've seen like most of those movies.
I heard Turbo was like one of the bad ones.
Yeah, but but Turbo's not...
It's not Pixar, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. Just talking about like $200 million worldwide for Ryan Reynolds is like a pretty good take. Like that's quite a bit of money.
And if you guys have time, I don't know how many of you guys are as like weird or neurotic about numbers as we are, but like go and look at that list and Denzel's list, and it'll blow your mind. It really will, because he will have movies. He'll have 10 movies that you've seen, heard, love, want to watch again. That
yeah,
have all probably made less money.
Than this.
Every single one of them straight across the board. Like, if you're talking, like, ratios comparison, and it's one of those weird things with Denzel, his movies just do not make money overseas.
Yeah, it's not in the way you would expect with a name like his.
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah.
Crazy. Opening weekend, this was number two at $40 million, which is still a huge opening weekend, but it was behind The Vow. That was Rachel McAdams and Gerard, or...
No, I think The Vow was Zac Efron, wasn't it?
Maybe that's right.
Or maybe it was Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum, Rachel,
Marissa, were you chiming in on Channing Tatum just now?
Channing Tatum.
Marissa Serafini in the booth, everybody. Say hello to her.
Hello.
Critically, this movie got a 6.8.
It's about right.
Feels correct, yeah. And then all top and audience critics gave 53, 56, and 64.
I would say I'm a little closer to the audience of 64 here than 6.8.
I would, too, and I think 50 is a little low.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And another thing that I had, another like idea that I had for thesis was that if you put two leading men with that movie star charisma that we always talk about, it will still be a serviceable movie. But that could be wrong. I think it is wrong, especially with this next thing we have coming up, which is famous casts that fall flat.
Yeah, we started just talking about like casts and pairings, things, you know, this is one of those situations you look back at 2012 and a lot of people would look and be like, oh, this movie came out. Like, I can't believe I never watched it. That's crazy. Ryan Reynolds, he's in Deadpool. I love Ryan Reynolds, and I love all those movies. And Denzel, wow. I guess no one gave a shit.
Yeah.
And, like, it happens all the time. I mean, big casts get put in movies, but what we really talked about was, like, things that jumped out to us as movies, like, wow, that's something that I wanted to watch. I was excited for that for some reason, and just... Two of my three I haven't even seen. I've like essentially...
I haven't seen any of mine.
Yeah, I've essentially studied. But I'll start with my first one because it's funny. It's Rock of Ages. And you guys know I love Cruise. And if you don't know, you probably know this from some of the music techniques we've done. I'm obsessed and extremely knowledgeable about 80s hair metal.
He knows more about it than anyone I've ever met.
I wrote an 80s hair metal musical in high school as a high school project before Rock of Ages even existed. I, like, love hair metal. I love Tom Cruise, and he plays Stacey Jacks. Now, I've watched every single Cruise scene as Stacey Jacks in this movie.
Of course you have.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because how could I not?
Is he sweet?
He's fucking awesome.
Yeah, of course he is.
He's great, and that's the only review of this movie is that Cruise is great as Stacey Jacks. That's what every review said. But the movie itself is terrible.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he's a legend. But I just never saw it because the reviews were so, so, so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just got panned.
All right, so I'll hop in then with mine. I think he might be on my list twice then, but Legend. I love Tom Hardy more than almost anyone I've ever met.
That's right, I forgot.
So it's a movie with Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
And it's like a gangster movie about these brothers that are like ruthless gangsters, and one of them's like a fucking psycho.
Kudge Brothers?
It doesn't matter, but like, you saw it in Lawless.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, awesome.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy, cool. And then he does Legend. You're just like, I've heard you can't understand anything he says is one of them.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad movie.
Yeah.
And and the reason I put it in for duos is because it's two Tom Hardy.
Yeah, it's two Tom Hardy. That's a good one. That's a really good one. I totally remember that. We were excited for that movie. Brian Helgeland wrote and directed that movie.
Yeah.
Helgeland, famous for A Knight's Tale and also writing and taking Pelham 1-2-3.
Yes.
He like wrote a bunch of super sweet movies. That movie just completely missed the mark.
Yeah.
My number two is going to be Nine. The follow-up film Daniel Day-Lewis made to There Will Be Blood, one of my favorite movies, an incredible performance.
Still to this day, it might be one of the only movies I haven't seen that he's in.
Yeah, I've seen almost every movie he's ever done. Mm-hmm. Rob Marshall directs. It's, you know, he directed Chicago. This is the most obligatory, let's throw this movie a few Oscar-nod bones, movie I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Because the cast is, you're pairing Day-Lewis with Nicole Kidman, mm-hmm. Marion Cotillard, like, the year before she's, I think it's the same year she's in Dark Knight Rises.
And it's, you know, she's...
It's a year after Inception. Like... Penelope Cruz, like, it's a fucking huge cast.
It's just like, give us an Oscar now.
And this movie, like, I can't think of a high profile musical that I've ever heard of that
like,
came and went
bad.
More than this movie.
No, you can't because it is without a doubt unarguably that Daniel Day-Lewis is the greatest male living actor right now.
Yeah.
Even if you think other people are more talented than him, there's no one that does what he does, where he does a movie once every couple of years, he always gets an Oscar nod, and if he doesn't win, you're kind of like, how did he not win?
He did three movies between 2007 and 2012, and he won Best Actor for two of them.
Yes, exactly. Like, this is what he does. And like, when you... Someone that's that careful with how they pick movies comes and does a movie that's bad.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Unfathomable.
It's crazy.
Especially considering Chicago won Best Picture in 2003.
Yeah, you've got the whole formula's there, but again, I think it could be there was no heart. I didn't see it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's one of those ones when you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, that movie exists.
Yeah. So my next one is The Drop.
Oh yeah.
Also.
Hardy.
With Hardy.
I've seen this movie.
I haven't.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But from what I've heard, from what you've said and what everyone else said, you've got Hardy and Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I should have to say is Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini, and you should be like, I want to watch that movie.
It's good enough.
It really is.
It's good enough. It's
okay.
Entertaining enough. Like, I enjoyed it enough. It's got Fred Armisen plays the cop.
Okay, so maybe I should have used Criminal instead, because I've been seeing parts of Criminal on cable.
It's bad.
And someone recently said that they think we'd like it, but I just think it just doesn't work for me. And you've got Oldman and Costner.
Yeah.
And it's a sweet cast.
I think Reynolds is in it, too.
Reynolds, yeah. Okay. What's your next one? Last one.
My last one is Righteous Kill. And this one, honest to God, Righteous
Such
Kill
a good one.
Might be the most egregious ever.
Yeah.
Because De Niro and Pacino were in two movies together prior to this, ever. They were in Godfather Part II, which won Best Picture, and they didn't have a scene together.
Yep.
They were in Heat in 1995, one of the most revered crime movies ever made, one of my five favorite movies ever, and they have a single scene together, and it's a great scene. But that was, like, a really big deal. They had a scene together.
I mean, like, you talk about De Niro and Pacino together, and they literally embody a time, a generation of great actors.
Completely. They're like the two guys. Flash forward 13 years, they make this fucking movie, Righteous Kill, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys remember the movie 88 Minutes. Yeah. It's the same director.
Is it?
Yeah. They're both... like, Righteous Kill is actually so bad that
you've
when
you've seen it.
I saw it in theaters. When you, I was, I'm telling you, it was so exciting.
I know, Pacino, and yeah, I get it.
I was so pumped up.
Wow.
It came out, and I was like, I'll tell you why I saw it, too. Because Teddy and I, we used to go see the worst movie of the week on Saturday nights for like a year and a half.
And that was one of them.
We saw 88 Minutes, and we found out that the same director was doing Righteous Kill, and we were like, there's no way this is good.
Yeah.
The villain's 50 Cent. Like, there's no way this is good.
The villain is 50 Cent.
Or he's not, I think he's one of the characters.
Right, but still, it's like, that's a good point. It's a good arguing point.
That movie is appallingly bad.
Really?
It is, like, you'll laugh out loud and turn it off. That movie we could do on the show and laugh, we'd laugh our asses off. Righteous Kill to me is the biggest, that's the biggest flop in the history of this.
So my other one is Gangster Squad.
Oh yeah,
exactly. Like
Gosling,
every single
Penn,
one of these movies.
Brolin, Stone should have been big.
Just say those names one more time.
Ryan Gosling, Josh Brolin, Sean Penn, Emma Stone.
Like you've got what? Every single one of them has been nominated for an Oscar, and two of them's won.
Sean Penn's won two Oscars.
Yeah. Stone just won.
Emma Stone's won an Oscar. Ryan Reynolds has been nominated twice, and.
And Brolin has been nominated.
Brolin's been nominated twice, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Those are your leading four. And Gangster Squad. Did you see Gangster Squad, Marissa?
I did, yeah.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it, and I'm not really into the gangster mob kind of movies, but I thought the action and the drama and the thriller aspect of it was great. And, you know, like you said, it's all leading
acting.
Cast members.
Yeah. Okay, so... And this is I want to speak to this because this is a point with The Drop and Gangster Squad. I haven't seen any of these movies that I've put on my list.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why my list might not be very accurate. But the reason that they are on my list is because you see that cast and you have these expectations. And for some people to be like, oh, yeah, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Is not what I want out of these casts. That's why I picked these movies, I guess. Even though I haven't seen them, where you've seen yours.
Fair. Well, I've seen one of them, but yeah.
Right. I haven't seen any of them.
And all of the Stacey Jack scenes in Rock of Ages.
Yes. Of course.
So moving on, guys, to the last bit we're going to do on the show today, and that is favorite line. I got to be honest with you, this was a struggle.
Yeah.
This was the biggest struggle of the entire episode's games today because I don't think that most of the lines in this movie are delivered well at all. In fact, I think most of them are pretty bad. What I went with, though... and I don't even have the exact line written down, but it's when he's saying goodbye to the girlfriend at the train station, and she's, like, mad at him, mm-hmm. and he's just, like, scared, and he's calling me, like, you just need to go.
You're right.
Go. You just need to go. And he's just not apologizing. He's like, please do this for me. Do this for us. He's just saying...
You just gotta go.
You just have to go.
Yeah.
You have to leave.
It's one of those... Yeah, it's one of those moments in movies where there's something so human about it where you're kind of like, fuck... How would I do that?
Yep.
You know, like, would I be man enough to do that?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Completely.
That's good. That's a good one. I already said mine earlier, and I don't have another one for it, but it's like, you had 600s, though.
Yes.
It's just, but I guess maybe the best part of it is when he comes up. How long was I under? You know, how long was that? You know, and you're just like, God, how do you do that?
Love you, Denzel. All right, so there's three action movie categories, guys. There are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate movies. Totally ridiculous are like Con Air, Face Off. You kind of just like laugh yourself out of the theater. They're great, but just hilariously bad and awesome. There's totally legitimate movies like, you know, Lone Survivor or Terminator
Fugitive.
2, The Fugitive.
Yeah.
They really hold together. They're classics. They're driven by drama. They're pretty believable, even if they're about aliens or whatever. And the middle category, legitimately ridiculous or ridiculously legitimate, as we call it, is like, you know, The Rock, Point Break,
Predator.
Yeah, you laugh, but you love it, and there's like usually at least one really strong detail that's driving the thing.
Your favorite action movie of all time is probably in that category.
Probably, yeah. Unless it's Terminator 2. But yeah, most of the ones that like we love that are truly great are the middle category. And this is a weird one.
This is a weird one.
I like don't really...
Do I call it totally legit? Because it feels right...
Yeah, I didn't laugh once. The closest thing to laughing I got was, like, just the Denzelishness.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think the Denzelishness, the walk-by shot, and, like, both of them getting shot and coming back, getting shot and coming back. You're going to die. You're going to not. Brendan Gleeson getting blown up and then coming back and shooting Denzel. Like,
yeah.
I guess there's just enough in it.
Yeah.
Or maybe there wasn't enough in it for me to believe it. You know what I mean? Like, it was either one of the two. So I think I had to put it in the middle category, which is kind of weird.
I'm going to go totally legit, and it... not every totally legit movie is the best movie. It's just, this is just a good and entertaining movie.
Just because something's believable doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah, I just don't think there was enough in this movie that knocked me off that I felt like I needed to put it in the middle category.
Yeah.
So that would be my assessment. There's only one part of the show left, guys, and that's going to be called The Pitch. Wow. And
I had no idea. Like, I don't know.
You're so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. I just did this I literally just did this because somebody tweeted at us yesterday or today and said, hey, going through old episodes, listening to the Mortal Kombat episode, totally hilarious. You guys need to do Anaconda. And I was like, you know what?
You know what we do?
Why the fuck haven't we done Anaconda yet? I was like, we're at this point in the show. We're getting close to 100 episodes.
Yeah.
And, like, we haven't done Anaconda yet.
Which is one of our favorites.
It's, like, the most quotable movie.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, not to mention, you know, my girlfriend's in Barcelona for the next 5 days. We have a dude's weekend coming up to get wasted and watch Anaconda.
This is perfect.
Yeah. It's going to be a great...
I can't wait.
Great way to spend the weekend.
You guys just lived a little closer. You can come hang out. All right, so Anaconda next week, guys. At AMA Podcast, tweeted us your hashtag AMA question. Let us know what you want to know about Anaconda.
What you want to know about Anaconda?
Yeah, or maybe it's just our favorite line to repeat.
All right, I'll do that.
I'm so excited. Guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And once again, check out the Anchor app. Download Anchor on your phone. I'm going to have some sweet show. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media. If you want to know the name of it, I'll be tweeting it out in the next 24 hours.
And you guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me here every Wednesday for this show and every Friday for the unproduced table reads starting at about 10 a.m. on Pacific Standard Time Friday mornings.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.